Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's VIP Studio Visit. The Captain will be back starting the first week of May. To order your tickets before they are all sold out, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on the VIP tab. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, New England. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I'm so excited to be with you guys. Giving you all of the updates that you need to know, including some of the crazy wokeness that is taking over our society. But first, I promised you guys a little bit of hypocrisy in the news. Now, usually when you hear hypocrisy, you might think liberals, and you wouldn't be wrong in this case either, because John Kerry is at it again. Kerry family jet flies to Idaho while he goes on international climate tour. The jet belonging to climate czar John Kerry's family, otherwise known as the Flying Squirrel, I believe, made its way to Idaho, where he and his wife have reportedly vacationed as he traveled in Asia to promote the Biden administration's message on climate change. Flight records show that the jet left Boston in the late afternoon and landed in Haley, Idaho later that evening. It's unclear what the trip was for, but the Idaho Press reported last year that he and his wife, Teresa, have been part-time residents in the nearby Sun Valley for decades. The former Secretary of State is currently on a trip through Asia that's set to end on Friday. The trip, which started April 1st, extends from Abu Dhabi to Dhaka and is intended for consultations on increasing climate ambition. He has a lot of climate ambition. Ahead of a climate summit hosted by President Biden. FlightAware logs show that the jet traveled from Bedford, Massachusetts to Martha's Vineyard, which is also in Massachusetts, on March 26th, and from Martha's Vineyard to Boston on March 28th. You know, as Kerry says, it's the only choice for someone like him. Now, this is what I like.
The time it takes me to get somewhere. I can't sail across the ocean. I have to fly to meet with people and get things done.
First of all, if Greta Thunberg can sail across the ocean, Mr. Kerry, then I suggest you hold yourself to that standard. Okay? Because she's missing math class to sail across the ocean. So what is your excuse, good sir?
It's the only choice for somebody like me.
Not a good enough excuse. But this is what I like. I believe this is Fox News, and they actually did the math here. It's unclear how Kerry has been offsetting his carbon output. He may have been buying, Howie's Honest Carbon Credits, as he claimed in 2019, but flight logs indicated that his family's private jet spent over 20 hours in the air from February of last year to January, culminating in an estimated, ready for this, Jared, 116 metric tons of carbon emissions. For comparison, okay, the typical passenger vehicle emits about 4.6 metric tons of carbon dioxide per year. That calculation assumed that car drives around 11,000 miles per year with a fuel economy of about 22 miles per gallon. So he and his family have used up 116 metric tons of carbon emissions.
Well, look, no disrespect to Secretary Kerry, but he's living in La La Land.
That's an insult to La La Land, I just have to say. He's living on Unicorn Island. The hypocrisy of John Kerry never ceases to amaze. And then speaking of
Ramadan Karim,
I would love to get Greta's take on this. She's probably unveiling the latest, thousands of dollars worth of statues made after her.
How dare you?
When she's done, I'm sure she'll weigh in on John Kerry. But speaking of hypocrites, this story really caught my eye over the weekend. I almost wrote about it, but I just, sometimes when you see a story and it annoys you so much, you're like, I can't even put pen to paper on this. Twitter suppresses, actually, let's start with the original story. Inside Black Lives Matter co-founder Patrice Khan Culler's million-dollar real estate binge. All right, Black Lives Matter co-founder Patrice Khan Culler's has gone on a real estate buying binge in recent years, snagging four high-end homes for $3.2 million in the U.S. alone. You know what that means. She's buying things mm-hmm. outside of the United States as well. As protests broke out across the country in the names of Black Lives Matter, if you guys didn't see this, I'm sure you have at this point, but there was a lot of protesting and looting in Minneapolis because of the shooting of Dante Wright that was happening over last night. And that whole story, from what we've gathered thus far, is that the man was pulled over. He tried to get back in his car, allegedly drove away. The cop shot and fatally killed him. Let's see this. As protests broke out across the country in the names of Black Lives Matter, the group's co-founder went on a real estate buying binge, snagging four high-end homes for $3.2 million in the U.S. alone. She also eyed property in the Bahamas at an ultra-exclusive resort where Justin Timberlake and Tiger Woods both have homes. Luxury apartments and townhouses at the beachfront. This reminds me of that old show I used to watch. It was called, like, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. And an Australian guy narrated it. Luxury apartments and townhouses at the beachfront Albany Resort outside Nassau are priced between $5 million and $12 million. Good for her. I mean, I think another element of this story, which Twitter obviously did not like, is that the neighborhood that she chose to buy this mansion in, or this million-dollar home, is Topanga Canyon, a secluded area of Los Angeles. Jared is our California expert.
Yeah.
Tell us about Topanga.
Topanga Canyon is, well, it's in the canyons just north of Los Angeles, kind of in the Hollywood area, heading west out towards Ventura. And to be fair to Patrice, whatever.
Khan Culler's,
thank you. $1.3 million home in Topanga Canyon is probably like a crack house. I mean, the real estate prices are ridiculous in Los Angeles, but it is a very secluded place in Los Angeles. And actually, you'll enjoy this. Topanga from Boy Meets World.
Is that what she's named after?
It was named after Topanga Canyon.
I figured there was a connection there. Yeah, and the real kicker of this whole story is that the population in Topanga Canyon is less than 2% black.
That sounds accurate.
So now she's facing, criticism, rightfully so. And one of the people who spoke out, an outspoken critic of Black Lives Matter, is Jason Whitlock, an African-American sports journalist. And so he tweeted this out, and he said, Black Lives Matter founder buys $1.4 million home in Topanga, which has a black population of 1.4%. And he goes on to criticize her. And you know what Twitter did? They're on top of this stuff. You know, death threats against Trump or against Republicans, that goes unnoticed. But you repost a story about Patrice Khan Culler's and her fancy homes, Twitter quickly deleted the post and locked his account for violating our rules against posting private information. He actually retweeted a real estate blog, because this was news all over the world. Everybody was posting about this. He retweeted a real estate blog and he was taken off Twitter for posting private information. They're running cover for the liberals over at Twitter. It must be exhausting. And then speaking of California, the real story that I've been dying to get to today, which the best stories on radio are the ones with incredible sound. There's a teacher, a high school teacher in California, and she was on a Zoom call. You know where this is going, because this has happened quite a few times at this point. And she was telling students, it really, when you read the quotes, Jared, I haven't listened to it yet. You listen to the sound. But it sounds very Jersey Shore-esque. These are like threats. She's kind of taunting the students at the school.
Yes. She was on the video is from somebody watching the Zoom conference on Facebook, so you hear them laughing in the background. But as far as I could tell, there was no presence of alcohol or any. She wasn't like holding a wine glass like the Leominster teacher was or any of that
no
stuff.
No cigarette smoke?
No cigarette that I noticed.
Now, here's my question, Jared. And I know the answer, but let's just set it up for everybody. What was she so mad about? What was she so riled up about?
Oh, wow. Racism, privilege, parents, kids, learning, having to do your job. Take your pick.
I think what we can really condense this down to is she was mad that they wanted her to go back to work. Could that be? Am I over?
I don't believe you are overstating that.
Okay, cool. So we will play that on the other side, guys. It's pretty unbelievable sound. And we will also take some of your calls before we have on Libby Emmons from the Post Millennial, one of my favorite guests. She's going to be talking about this. There's so many crazy stories that the Post Millennial picks up right away. And we will be asking her all about those. So do not go anywhere. By the way, who says there's no such thing as a free lunch? Not me, because with my friends at Aviva Trattoria, we give away a free lunch every other Friday here at the studio. That means this Friday, I will be picking from my Aviva Trattoria bucket. I'll be picking out a winner this Friday. And if you want to enter, all you have to do is go to gracecurlyshow.com and it will drop down. It's like this little square box will drop down. You just enter your email and you are entered to win the contest. You get to have an incredible meal by Aviva. And you get to watch the show here with me in studio. It's really fun. We have a great time. The last time might have been my favorite spread yet. I mean, farmhouse pizza, which we love. The arancini balls, which are amazing. And the chicken club really blew me away, Jared.
Yeah. And they have brought in some gnocchi for us with a little meat sauce, a pasta, pizza, seafood. Oh, the seafood risotto. They brought the seafood risotto as well. The menu is amazing what they can do.
The menu is amazing. Jared is not lying. And the other part of it is it really, no matter who in your family, what kind of taste they have, if they like seafood, if they like just, you know, a good burger, it really fits everybody. And the people there are also great. Marcy comes in. She brings all the best food. She also takes requests from the winner, which is really fun. Last time we got calamari because one of the VIPs wanted that, and that was great. From seafood to their homemade pasta, Aviva has you covered. They also have four convenient locations in Marlboro, Maynard, Wrentham, and Westward. If you haven't won yet and you're dying to get there, that's where you want to hit up. Takeout is available too. To enter to win the Aviva VIP lunch, go to gracecurlyshow.com. That's gracecurlyshow.com. When we get back, we got this tough teacher from Cali who tells the parents, or tells the students at her school, tell your parents to come at me. It's a little bit like that woman from Dr. Phil. What was her name? Bad Bobby. Catch me outside. How about that? It's very intimidating.
And we'll come at me, bro.
Come at me, bro. We'll play all this sound on the other side, guys. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Grace Curley, she's working for you.
I'm like Bette Midler in For the Boys. Gotta keep the troops entertained.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Happy Monday. We're rolling right along here. Today's poll question is brought to you by Nauset Disposal. Affordable rubbish and recycling. From Duxbury to Provincetown, go to NossetDisposal.com. That's NossetDisposal.com. Jared Diglio, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Would you avoid eating and drinking indoors after getting vaccinated?
Dr. Fauci suggests.
Yeah, so if you guys missed this, actually, let's play the sound, Jared, just so people know what we're talking about here. Dr. Fauci, he's changing lanes again now. Now he's saying, I don't know, people say moving the goalpost, but I think that's officially lost its potency. We need a new expression for this, because this guy every single day throws out something new. Last week he was asked about how come Texas that lifted their masks, and you remember, it was Neanderthal thinking, it was impending doom, it was the end of the world. How come their cases are going down, and lockdown states like New York and Massachusetts, their cases are going up? And Dr. Fauci, as always, was not sure, but it could be XYZ. And now he's saying that it's not okay for vaccinated people to eat indoors. This is cut four.
Eating and drinking indoors in restaurants and bars, is that okay now?
No, it's still not okay for the simple reason that the level of infection, the dynamics of infection in the community are still really disturbingly high.
The level of airtime that Dr. Fauci gets, to me, is still really disturbingly high. I would very much appreciate if he would stop appearing on TVs everywhere. I change the channel as fast as I can, but it's like whack-a-mole. He just pops up everywhere. And then he's on Nickelodeon, you know? Maybe you have your kids and you're trying to get ready for something. You turn on the TV, you come back in the room, they're looking at Dr. Fauci. The guy is everywhere. All right, now, we tease this a little bit.
97% of the audience says no, they will not avoid eating and drinking indoors after being vaccinated.
I feel like most people have been eating and drinking indoors for a very long time now.
I was talking about that with Taylor this morning, where I was like, you know, this whole idea of getting back to your normal routine, if you haven't allowed the virus to let you deviate from some type of normal routine, then it's not a big deal. And again, I understand we're blessed. We haven't lost our jobs. We haven't been shut out and locked down. But if you didn't let it interrupt what you normally do, you've been kind of normal the whole time.
Yeah, there are definitely levels of normal that people are at. And I mean, the most abnormal thing I do is wear a mask when I go into stores. And I'm hoping the second they tell me that they're going to let me in without it, I will be taking my mask off. Actually, totally different thought here, but we're talking about the Black Lives Matter co-founder and how she bought this million-dollar house in Topanga Canyon, a primarily white town or city in California. And I just got a great text from somebody, and they said, a good poll question for tomorrow is, which group are the biggest grifters, Black Lives Matter or the Lincoln Project?
Ooh,
it's tough.
That's tough.
I think Black Lives Matter is dealing with more money, but the Lincoln Project is a who's who of hacks. All right, we got to get to this teacher sound. There's a teacher in California, and she got caught on a Zoom call intimidating the students and once again telling them, you know, your parents are racist jerks, whatever she said. Let's play the sound here. This is Alyssa Pirro, a high school teacher from California, cut seven.
Themselves out. The haters did. They are forced to bring awareness to the situation that they are in because other people put them in that situation.
Well, my question is, in your case, where is the white student union? Because we need all races.
You don't need a white student union, Jake. Oh. You get everything.
Ooh, Jake gets everything. Who is this Jake person?
She's a high school teacher. I think Jake is one of the students.
He doesn't get any respect from his teacher.
He doesn't need it. He gets everything else because white.
I wonder if it's one of those schools where the white males have to, you know, get called on after everybody else. Let's play cut eight.
Your parent wants to talk to me about their profession and their opinion on their profession. I would love to hear that. I know very little about anything else in the world other than education. Okay. However, if your parent wants to come talk to me about how I'm not doing a good enough job in distance learning based on what you need as an individual, just dare them to come at me. Because I'm so sick to my stomach of parents trying to tell educators how to do their job. I have never once gone to a doctor's appointment and tried to tell my medical health provider how to treat me. You know why? Because I know nothing about that. I didn't get my degree in medicine. I am going off. I'm sorry. This is my go-off period.
She's insufferable. Oh, my gosh. And here, and you know what the real problem is that I don't care if you're a teacher, I don't care if you're a doctor, I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. You should never talk to people like that. I don't care if they're your students. Talk to people like they're humans. Yikes. Worst teacher of the year. Come at me, bro. We'll be back with Lemmy Evans from The Post Millennial. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Eating and drinking indoors in restaurants and bars, is that okay now?
No, it's still not okay for the simple reason that the level of infection, the dynamics of infection in the community are still really disturbingly high.
That is the expert in chief, Dr. Fauci. He is always telling us what to do, but more importantly, what not to do. And it really blows my mind that these news networks continue to have him on, despite the fact that I don't think most normal Americans are taking his advice anymore. I mean, I gave up on his advice after the 2 weeks to flatten the curve or slow the spread or whatever it was. And so now, a full year later, he might as well, he's probably the last person I would take advice from. If anything, I would do the opposite of whatever he tells me to do. Like George Costanza. If you're wrong on everything and you do the opposite, you're probably going to be right. Now, there's no better person to talk to about this than Libby Emmons from the Postmillennial. She also writes for the Federalist and the New York Post. Libby, thank you very much for once again joining the Grace Curley Show.
Hey, thanks so much. Always glad to be here.
Libby, so I saw you writing about Dr. Fauci today and this take he has about not eating indoors. What do you think? What are your thoughts on the expert?
Oh, the expert. You know, I'm with you on that 2 weeks to flatten the curve thing. I was totally on board with that. Made a lot of sense. Let's not overwhelm the hospital system. But then, you know, it kept going, and now we're supposed to skip Thanksgiving and skip Christmas. And this whole thing where they're touting the vaccine, but they're not saying, if you get the vaccine, your life can go back to normal, right?
Right.
And I think they're really missing a huge opportunity here, which is, if you get the vaccine, you can go do the things that normal people used to be able to do. Why are they not doing that? They're not doing that in large part because of Anthony Fauci, who just keeps changing his mind about everything. There was the clip, I think the one that I was, you know, I just wrote up quickly this morning, but it's about how he's still saying that you can't eat inside even if you've had a vaccine. You still can't go to the bar. You still can't go out for dinner. And I think that that's a really big mistake, whether it's true or not, which we don't know, because it's not like he's been very clear about that at any point, you know?
Right. And he just keeps changing his mind and people keep listening to him and it's not really getting us anywhere. But I think what always surprises me the most is how there's a group in our society that is so willing to listen to this guy. I call them the Fauci followers, and everything he says, they take it to heart and they start repeating it. And I don't know who's more to blame here, the media or Dr. Fauci himself. Libby, I want to switch gears here for a second, because you wrote up an incredible story about the White Lives Matter rally. And the thing about this rally that happened is not a lot of people showed up. And If I were to see that headline, I would think, well, that's good that White Lives Matter, because it's, you know, it's supposed to be this racist group. That's what the media is always portraying it as, that they didn't have a lot of people there. But tell us what NBC took out of this situation.
Right. So there was apparently a White Lives Matter conversation online about how everyone should go up and have White Lives Matter protests. What happened was these protests went off and nobody showed up. There were several instances where it was one person who showed up with like hundreds of counter protesters. The one in Philadelphia looked great. I spent a fair bit of time in Philadelphia in my life, and they had tasty cakes and probably some cheesesteaks and everything else. These were the counter protesters. So there were not really a lot of white supremacists showing up to express their racial hate, which is a super good thing. But for NBC, the lack of White Lives Matter protesters was evidence of the scourge of white supremacy in this country. And I just found that so surprising. In fact, we have a reporter in Toronto that covers a lot of protests and things. She's very interested, Beth Bache, in civil unrest. And she came to me and said, there seems to be some sort of White Lives Matter thing. Do we want to cover that? And we were all like, nah, seems dumb. Skip it. And nothing happened. There was no thing that was going on. But this narrative, this media narrative that white supremacy is the root of all problems in the U.S., just will not die despite evidence that shows there are just not that many white supremacists. The push is that racism exists in every conceivable area of our lives, but it's not right out there front and center. And for some reason, that is evidence of white supremacy being a massive problem. It just seemed so bizarre to me that this is the takeaway. The takeaway was that it's been pushed underground.
I'm speaking with Libby Emmons.
We deal with this stuff all the time.
I'm speaking with Libby Emmons from the Postmillennial. Libby, I want to ask you about racism, specifically about a story that comes out of Boston. But first, just to your point on that, a lot of times these liberals, like you were saying about NBC, trying to say, oh, well, there wasn't a lot of White Lives Matter ralliers. That means somehow that means there's more white supremacy. I saw the same thing with the Asian American hate crimes, because at one point I saw serious people trying to argue that hate crimes that were committed by Black men against Asian Americans somehow still traced back to white supremacy. I would try to explain it, but you have to bend your logic into like a pretzel to try to figure out how everything works back to white supremacy.
Yes, and there's an interesting thing about that as well, which is there's in pretty much all of these cases, there's no evidence. Well, in some of these cases there are, but in a lot of these cases, there's no evidence that these were anything other than economic crimes. So if you're a young man seeking to rob someone and you see some elderly people, they're probably a good bet. There was a man who was robbed in San Francisco. He was an elderly Asian man, and he was robbed leaving an ATM vestibule. It would really boggle the imagination if that's a hate crime. You know, that seems like a very economic crime to me. But the idea is that white supremacy has created, if I may try to do these pretzel shapes, a little bit of acrobatics. The idea is that white supremacy has created the conditions of discrimination and inequity, which mean that people who are not white are actually committing crimes because of white supremacy. Not because they're white supremacists, but because the conditions of white supremacy in society have made it such that that's the only thing they can do. But really what this does is it takes the agency away from individuals who commit crimes. To say that someone who goes out there and attacks another person does so because they have no choice is to completely diminish that person's personal responsibility. It's a dehumanizing tactic to say that the perpetrator of a crime, such as these economic type of crimes, that the perpetrator of a crime is not responsible for their actions because they've been unduly influenced by the conditions around them. And I just don't think that's a very equitable thing to say. It certainly doesn't have equality in mind.
Yeah, and there was a quote that I'm probably going to butcher right now, but I saw it somewhere online, and it said, we're getting to a point in society where we're all responsible for the actions. An entire group can be responsible for the actions of one person, but one person is never responsible for their own actions. And that's something I see because I see these crimes and, you know, these shootings especially, and my gut reaction, no matter what, is, wow, that person is a monster. My first gut reaction is not, what was their race? It's why would people, where are we at? Why are people doing this? What's the root cause? Like, what happened? Why didn't the red flag laws catch this? But other people, especially in the left and the media, their first reaction is, what's the race? Or how can we spin it to fit the narrative of the racial divide?
Right. And, you know, I wonder if that even is the first reaction, or if the first reaction is, how do I spin this to better support my narrative?
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah,
it's sad.
I wonder if it is that. Yeah, it's really a shame.
Libby, I want to ask you, because I'm in Boston and I read the Postmillennial every day. That's Libby's publication, and it's great because any sort of woke story about, you know, teachers on Zoom calls or crazy groups, you know, promoting whatever, it usually first ends up on the Postmillennial. And I give you guys a lot of credit for finding these stories. So when I saw one from Boston, I was like, oh, that's where I am. And I clicked on it and I was amazed by this story. Harvard doctors are promoting an anti-racist agenda for medicine. Can you lay this out for my listeners? Because I think my listeners should be scared and informed about this anti-racist agenda for medicine.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty interesting and spoke to some of the problems that we're going to be facing. So we basically had some doctors in Boston who were advocating for medical treatment to be distributed inequitably according to the race of a patient. And much like the mental gymnastics that we just did, where we uncovered how a person could think that everything that happens badly in a society is the root of white supremacy, that's sort of what's going on here as well. The idea that these doctors have is that conditions are so inequitable and horrifying for Black and brown patients that the conditions, or that these conditions are so bad that it justifies prioritizing their care over, is it over the care of others? I'm not sure that it is entirely, but it definitely seems to be to prioritize their care. And I wasn't really sure, when I looked at the story, my first thought was, that can't be right. That seems really weird, and it seems like a strange thing for doctors to be saying. But the more I dug into it and looked at what these doctors were advocating for, they really do believe that the way to correct inequity in medicine is to prioritize Black and brown patients over white patients, it's such a weird thing because on the one hand, you just want everyone to get quality care. These people's lives are super important. You know, we all care about the people in our lives and we want them to be well taken care of. But applying medical practice to standards of social justice does seem like it would leave a lot of people out. And they were also interested in federal reparations.
I saw that. But Libby, even more than leaving people out, what I first think of is, so a lot of times we talk about, and I've had you on the show talking about this as well, critical race theory in schools and how you're kind mm-hmm. of teaching kids, you know, you're the oppressor or you're the oppressed or, you know, break down your privilege, whatever it is. And parents kind of get worried because they think to themselves, well, can't you teach the math or can't you focus on, you know, vowels or whatever the basics are? But we all kind of think, well, they'll learn it eventually. You know, they'll mm-hmm. major in something and they'll get enough education. But then when you find out that medical doctors are concerning themselves with mm-hmm. all of this theorizing and all of this stuff that's not about actual medicine, that's what scares me. I'm like, I want my doctors to be worried yeah. about surgeries and the best medical procedures. I don't want them worried about reparations and redressing and all these crazy things that are going on.
Yeah, that's a super good point. I don't even know if I thought about it in those terms, but that makes a lot of sense. It actually reminds me of something that I saw the other day on social media where someone was saying that school children don't learn anything about the nations that colonized Africa. And it had like a map of Africa with like the lines of how the various European nations carved up the continent, which of course they did. But my first thought was, when are they going to have time to learn that when they have to sit here and learn how racist America is? Like, where are we going to get this time for this history lesson? But yeah, why are these doctors prioritizing this kind of, you know, critical race discourse over trying to solve actual medical problems?
Exactly. Guys, Libby Emmons writes for The Federalist. She also is a senior editor at The Postmillennial. Libby, I tell people all the time, if there's one website you want to check out every day, well, it's GraceCurlyShow.com. But then the second website has to be The Postmillennial because you guys find all of the craziest stories. It makes my blood pressure go up a little bit when I see all of the nuttiness that's happening in the world. But it's a great site. And we thank you so much, Libby, for being on the show.
Thanks so much.
All right, guys, when we get back on the other side, I want to take your calls on that. What do you think? 844-500-4242. I also have, speaking of, you know, racial inequality, you remember Pete Buttigieg said that highways are racist? Well, Pete Buttigieg was on with Chuck Wallace over the weekend, and we have some great sound from that. So do not go anywhere. Still a lot of show to get to. This is The Grace Curley Show.
She's never held office, but she paid the Whiskey Priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. She's got the voice of an angel.
I've been called the songbird of my generation, of people who've heard me.
It's Grace Curley.
Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. So we just hung up the phone with Libby Emmons, and I see that Gad Saad, am I saying his name right? He's a great guy on Twitter. He published a story, and he wrote above it, he was just sharing this story from Yahoo News, and he said, all roads lead to white supremacy, definitely not racist. And I just have to say, all roads lead to white supremacy. Sometimes all roads lead to Putin. But if you're Brian Stelter, all roads lead to Fox News. I'm just saying. Very interesting, though. Interesting conversation about all of this critical race theory and how it's infiltrating all different parts of our world. Albert, you're next with Grace on The Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Albert.
Hi, Grace. So I had an incident with medical political correctness. Last October, I was diagnosed with an infection in my mouth that still has affected my voice, and my doctor referred to it as life-threatening and told me to get to a hospital. I checked in at a very well-known hospital where that doctor is. I checked in at noon on a Saturday. And to keep it simple, whether it was x-rays, vital signs, everything took 2 hours to get, and I had repeatedly asked for it. And then I wasn't even treated until 10 o'clock that night. And people were coming in and coming out of the emergency room all the time.
Yeah.
And nobody saw me.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know. That's a very specific situation. But I mean, I don't like to be in a waiting room at a hospital. That's usually when someone tells you that they're either in the emergency room or at the hospital for anything, you know, they're probably going to be there. It's like a 2 a.m. type deal. Thank you for the call, Albert. We don't really have a lot of time to get into the specifics of that. What I do want to say, though, is on the other side, we'll be talking to Jessica Vaughn because the border crisis is not slowing down. It's actually getting worse. They got the numbers in for March. As probably most people predicted, they were not good. And we're going to ask her about that $2.1 billion in aid that's happening in New York for illegal immigrants. We're also going to ask her about how Joe Biden, did you see this story? A $1.5 trillion discretionary funding request was submitted by the Biden White House. Guess when they submitted it, Jared?
Last night.
Friday afternoon, the Friday drop. We'll be back on the other side with Jessica Vaughn from the Center for Immigration Studies. Do not go anywhere. It is The Grace Curley Show.